Hello and welcome to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability fun news, facts and reviews brought to you by the Green Elephant. This week, a report that wildlife is in catastrophic decline due to human destruction, the first International Clean Air Day, a law to ban facial recognition, Instagram builds its equality and inclusion, and man makes friends with an octopus. And I'm delighted to say that joining me to discuss these and more is Russell. Hello, Russell.
Made friends with an octopus. I haven't heard this one before. I'm looking.
Enjoy that.
Is it not the same octopus that they used in the World Cup to guess which match is which?
It's not that one, though. But also, we've
I think
got
he's
coming
dead,
up. Yeah, he might be. Also coming up are sustainability selection, Action Alley, and of course, fact or fake. We'll also be talking about Apple vodka. No, Apple vodka, not Apple vodka. Uber, McDonald's, makeup, plastic food, vegan leather, jeans, fish, turtles, and octopuses. Or is that
octopi?
I saw octopod or something. I don't know. So, headline story today. Wildlife populations have fallen by more than two-thirds in less than 50 years, according to a major report by the conservation group, the World Wildlife Fund. The report says that this catastrophic decline shows no signs of slowing, and it warns that nature is being destroyed by humans at a rate never seen before. Wildlife is in freefall as we burn forests, overfish seas, and destroy wild areas, say Tanya Steele, the chief exec at the WWF. And some of the findings in this report are quite scary. So this said that there was an average fall of 68% in populations of mammals, birds, amphibians, reptiles and fish since 1970. So that's an average. So some of those species will have fallen massively more than that. And so it's just scary numbers when you dig into the research that the it was the Zoological Society of London who I think they run London Zoo, but some of the numbers, a million species threatened with extinction.
Yeah.
we discussed, I think, was it last week or the week before, and we put a post on Instagram about, you know, every minute or so another species becomes extinct. And it's truly, truly staggering.
A lot of it's based on greed, to be honest. But then there's the other side of it. They were talking about 1.3 billion tons of food are wasted each year. Mm. So that's us spending $1 trillion in this case. So, which is an unfathomably large number. I don't think people really realize how much $1 trillion is. That's the economy of the UK, really.
Yeah.
They're shy of it. And that's how much food we waste. And of course, to do that, a lot of that's going to be animal. And I don't know. Did you see it was a TV program with David Attenborough a little while ago, and he went back to the same place that he'd been to and been filmed when he first started filming 50 years earlier, and saw what it was like. Yeah. And it kind of made you go cold. I mean, climate change and all the other things. It's just bad management of where you live.
It was in Madagascar where he was looking at lemurs or something about 50 years ago, and he'd gone back
and orangutans.
There was no forest there at all.
And they were fighting machines, and these orangutans were fighting machines.
It's interesting because there is a new Attenborough documentary coming on, and the report and some of the supporting context talks about what's required to turn this round, and it's a kind of devastating story, but as with all these things, there's a chance. There are things that can be done. Systematic shifts in how we produce food and create energy and so on can turn this around. And we've got some stories later in the show about good news about things that have turned around. But it's a
horrific,
very very worrying story.
If you look at the graph, if that graph was the how much was in threat and went the other way, and it was related to the COVID curve, you'd have a fit. It's just a constant drop in wildlife. It's horrendous.
And we'll put a link to the story in the show notes.
Yeah,
and have a look at that graph. And finally, there's a piece at the end, and we put a post on Instagram, I think yesterday, about the decline in elephant numbers, because you know, they're under threat from poaching and habitat loss, and they've gone from about 1.3 million in the wild in 1970 down to under 400,000 in the wild. So it's massive reductions.
And to kill an animal like that, beautiful animal like that, for two tusks is just wicked.
Wrong.
Sustainability selection.
Okay, so now time something for this week's recommendation. So our sustainability selection for the week is a YouTube channel, and this YouTube channel is created by Alexandra Magnin, and he's got many years of experience as working as a sustainability consultant, and he's also a keen artist. And so what he's done is he's put these two interests, expertises together, and he creates engaging videos about sustainability so everyone can learn for free. So really encourage you to go and look at this channel. There's a link on the show notes, but he covers all manner of topics related to sustainability, things like what circular economy is, the impact of big oil on climate change, how to recycle Tetra Pak cartons, Earth Overshoot Day, which we talked about last week, the impact of capitalism, how to come up with a sustainability strategy, sustainability for kids. And it's all really easy to watch, easy to digest. They're all short. They're kind of 5 to 10 minutes are the longest. And for our international listeners, I'm sure we've got lots of those. A lot of the videos are most of the videos are in French. Some of them are in German, and we've also got a smattering in Japanese as well. So yeah, go and have a look at those. They're well worth your time.
Looks good.
Now let's take a look at some other sustainability news stories from this week. So let's start, as ever, with company news. And Apple is investing in constructing the world's largest onshore wind turbines. These are going to be in Denmark, and they are bonkers tall. 200 meters tall, these wind turbines, which is just, that's massive. Being built near Esbjerg, I've sailed from Esbjerg, and they're going to use them to power their data centers. So I think this is a good news story, really. It's a company that's acting in line with what it says it's going to do around emission reductions and things like that. They're looking to become carbon neutral. In order to do that, they need to use renewable energy. So, it's good to see.
I think using sustainable energy, renewable energy right from its source is going to be better as well than passing it through a grid. You know, even if we manage to get the whole national grid, say in the UK, working on renewable energy, it still loses a whole stack of that energy in transmission. So the closer you are to the point of generation, the better it is for you as well. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's okay. People don't like windmills. My goodness, we live in a part of the world that had the first wind farm, and the stink that went up about that was unbelievable. But now people accept windmills. I think they're quite attractive, to be honest.
They're quite elegant in their own way. Do you like vodka, Russell?
Well, I used to. I don't know anymore. Doesn't treat me well.
If you find that you fancy a tipple again, Absolute Vodka are rolling out some paper bottle prototypes. So they've got these bottles to have their vodka being rolled out in the UK and Sweden, and they're just doing a trial, and they're made from 57% paper and 43% plastic, but it's recycled plastic, the recycled stuff is itself recycled, so there's a bit of a recycling loop in the plastic that's used. So they've got a kind of an inner lining of plastic, but the the main bulk of the bottle is paper. So again, it sounds like a great initiative.
Is it recyclable?
Recycled.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Are you gonna bung that in the plastic bin or in the paper bin?
Or in the paper bin? What do you think, listeners? Let us know. Yeah. Where should we put the plastic paper bottle?
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting dilemma. I can see us ripping the paper off to get to the plastic to put it in two different bins. No,
so it's not. Companies committing to become zero emission, the latest in this trend, committing by 2040 to become fully zero emission, and it's Uber. And on first reading, I thought, 2040, Uber, that's really poor. But actually, what they're doing is there's some different targets. They're trying to make the whole platform zero emission, which I don't is a less good headline than we're making all our cars electric vehicles by 2030. That's a better headline, but they've gone with
yeah.
So it's an interesting one.
Yeah, but bad choice for marketing, maybe.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's ambitious, isn't it? I mean, that's every one of the vehicles that they use. And obviously, they got a fairly unique, the biggest taxi company in the world that owns no taxi. So essentially, they'll be saying, if you want to bring your car to the game, it's going to have to be carbon. You know, it's going to have to be an electric vehicle. So yeah.
So on balance, do we think Uber have done well or not on that one?
I think that they're certainly doing something which seems to be incredibly difficult, trying to create a transport system completely carbon neutral. I think that's good. 2040.
I think maybe
better headlines.
We have company news every week on the podcast on the show, so maybe we'll have a good or bad thumbs up, thumb down for each piece of company news that we review.
Oh yeah. Can I get? I'll get myself a little hooter or something. Can I?
Yeah, maybe. So moving on to the next one. This is McDonald's, who are beginning testing reusable cups for hot beverages. Really, McDonald's?
Oh wow!
You're beginning to test them. The initiative, which will be first trialed in 2021. And right. The partnership will allow customers to reduce waste by choosing a durable loop-created cup for small deposits. You've got to pay for your recyclable cup as well as... And I'm just thinking... So McDonald's has some paper cups already, but for their really hot coffees and stuff, they just this just seemed like not a great effort, really. I mean...
It seems like, that reads like an article from nothing, really.
But just... Why would you say that we're going to try and use recyclable cups next year? We can all go down the road and buy recyclable paper cups. Why can't McDonald's? And yeah, not okay. A great effort, but
burb.
So I can see you're really upset by that, Russell. And I can see
my regular McDonald's.
Possibly your mascara's running. But don't worry, because L'Oreal have launched makeup recycling across the UK. So when you finish with your mascara, you can take it into the shop and you can recycle the makeup container. Now this is a good idea, because all those lipsticks and compacts and pens and concealers and eyeliners that you've been using,
yes,
all of those can be recycled. So L'Oreal are going to take these and they're going to turn them into kind of plastic pellets and recycle them for use in other products. So, that's a good idea.
Okay, I mean, it is stuff that would go into landfill.
It is.
You know, there's no way anybody would put any of that stuff into a recycle. So it's very difficult to get rid of nail polish and all that kind of, says it won't be covered.
But I think that, you know, if you've ever looked in your wife or partner's makeup bag, as I was brave enough to do once, you'll see the bottomless pit of makeup ends, and I think it's a great idea that all that makeup that, you know, isn't in fashion anymore, or you don't like that brand, or you know, it's gone hard, or whatever it is with makeup, you can now get all the plastic cases recycled, and they're not just taking L'Oreal makeup; it's any makeup. So.
Oh right, okay. Yeah. No, I'll give that a thumbs up, I think. as a great makeup user stroke wearer.
So onto some more sustainable technology-based stories now. And a company called Lyodell Basel, who I'd not heard of, but they are one of the world's largest plastics, chemicals, and refining companies. What they are doing is they are doing some, what they're calling molecular recycling of plastic. So what they're doing is they're taking plastic waste of all kinds. This isn't like our put it in the recycling, can't put lids in, can't put black plastic in, can't do this stuff.
Yeah.
They're taking all sorts of plastics and recycling them. It's early stages, but if this proves successful, they can scale this up to massive quantities, which I think will be brilliant. And they're looking at not just plastics, but things like used cooking oil, used vegetable oil, they can then reuse that. And because of the process, the recycled plastic doesn't normally come with as good a grade or quality as kind of virgin plastic. But in this case, they're saying that the recycled comes as pure and as high quality as brand new plastic. So, we're saying that recycled plastic now is as good quality as brand new plastic. So that's got to be a great step forward.
Yeah, because eventually, plastic degrades through the recycling process, as I understood it.
If this does what it says, why would you ever need to make more plastic? You would just recycle what you had and turn it into brand new plastic that you could reuse again.
Yep.
Just keep it one big circular.
That sounds great. We'll watch that one with interest.
Indeed. So you've got a couple of new kittens, Russell, I believe.
I have, yes.
You've got two kittens or just one?
Two kittens, Max and Klaus. And if anybody
Max
can guess
Klaus.
If Klaus is named after, send your suggestions in. Yeah.
So, and feeding Max and Klaus, do you give them tins of meat or biscuits?
We do a mixture, but the
okay.
We have gone dry. Haven't tried veggie though.
No. So for those pet owners that are vegetarian and have struggled with what we're going to feed their little fluffy friends, there's now an alternative. Bond Pet Foods has introduced a new lab-grown chicken protein. So instead of having to buy tins of meat that are, from live animals, you can now have your tin of pet food grown in the lab.
Okay.
Sounds like it's going to take a couple of years to come to the market, but
I'll be happy to have my pets eat it and not me. I really don't fancy the idea of lab-grown chicken protein. Reformulated lab-grown chicken.
it seems that they put these cells together and they put it in a fermentation tank with a bit of yeast, and a few days later it pops out. And it says the fermentation process is similar to one commonly used to make enzymes for cheese. So it's chicken or cheese, who knows? Very similar. Talking of growing and making things, vegan leather. So obviously our vegan friends don't want any animal products. But there's a process that's been announced to make vegan leather from mushrooms. And so the process is that they grow it on sawdust or agricultural waste. And it's not the mushrooms itself, it's the roots that kind of, they grow into a thick mat, which is, it says it's very similar to crab shells. So it's quite rigid and quite,
tough.
Robust. Takes a couple of weeks to grow. So that's nothing at all when you think about how long it takes to raise a cow.
Yeah.
Purity to make leather. It sounds like, again, another great initiative. And this sounds like it's coming fairly soon. They're commercializing it now. But already making products and looking to make it mass market. So
yeah, if you like leather pants, that's a good idea. I did you missed the headline that, for those that appreciate a good play on words, it says vegan leather made from mushrooms could mold the future of sustainable fashion. I was impressed with it.
Moving on. Vehicle emissions, something we've touched on a few times, and the pollutants that come out of cars. Now, in a lot of countries actually, and certainly in the US, they have rules, Clean Air Acts and things like that, that crack down on emissions, and cars are fitted with emission control systems that prevent them submitting a certain amount of emissions. And there was a big news story a few years back about VW that had been tampering with these to understate the amount of emissions that were produced, and they got taken to court over that. But it seems that there's a large market in what's called delete devices, which override those emissions restrictions. So essentially, what was believed to be the amount of emissions from vehicles is not the amount of emissions from vehicles. The number is probably an awful lot higher.
And
I think this was an interesting one, because it shows that you can put in place legislation with the best of intentions, but those of our fellow humans who aren't interested in sustainability, climate issues, are just going to find their ways around it.
Yeah. And and then at a corporate level, whether or not the chief executive knew about it is an irrelevance. They, you know, it costs them, I think, 30 billion euros, I think, Volkswagen have footed so far for that particular. It's quite clear they're not the only manufacturer, because it's better for them to sell a low emissions car. And so, you do feel somewhat cheated. And I don't know if I would trust any readings from a car, diesel or otherwise, really.
No. Well, I certainly wouldn't, when you look at the CO2 things in the glossy mags from car manufacturers. You've got to take them with a pinch of salt. Anyway, moving on to environmental news, and it's not great times in California at the moment, because 2020 is again a record for the most acres of land burned in California. The wildfires are currently burning, I believe, and 2.2 million acres of California. They killed 8 people, destroyed over 3,000 buildings, and worse might be to come. There's winds, high temperatures, things like that still to come.
And I still have a president that's ignoring the climate is changing and the heat is changing.
A reality.
I mean, heaven's own knows, again, going back to our first headline story, this is another habitat destruction. You know, they've got a fairly rich wildlife habit over there in America and California, and that's just burned it down. It's horrendous. Not good.
Have you heard, and I like this name, of the smooth hand fish? Sounds like it's for your easy listening desire.
I've met people with a smooth handshake.
Smooth hand fish.
And go on, tell me.
The smooth hand fish is so called that because it has a fin shaped like a hand, and it uses them to walk along the bed of the ocean. It doesn't actually swim. But the bad news is that this week that fish has been declared extinct. The first fish species to be declared extinct in modern history. So that's really sad. But while we're talking extinction, the Burmese roofed turtle was believed to have been extinct 20 years ago. They thought, that's it, there's no more of those left. But some were found in markets in Myanmar, and a serious effort was undertaken to rescue them, and you know, they're up to 1,000 of those now, so that's, you know, great news.
I don't know what you can say about these. It's both horrific. I mean, the fact that we could lose the turtle and find them, I suppose it's very possible. We don't know
but
anything
you'll enjoy this one, though, because, you know, while we're on the topic of this, 30 new marine species have been found deep in Galapagos's seas. And the reason why I like this one, and I thought we would give this a mention. So there are 30 newly identified species, including 10 bamboo corals, 11 sponges, and my personal favourite that was found, 4 squat lobsters.
Squat lobsters. So if squat you find lobster.
If you see a lobster that's looking a bit shorter and a bit more waddly than the others, and as well as the lobsters, a brittle star.
Oh, that's, well, brittle as in starfish?
Well, I don't know, a brittle star.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, I guess, you know, it's just sad. Good and bad of species lost and species discovered.
Found. We're still scratching the surface of what actually is diversity of life.
Yeah.
In the sea and insects life. They find new insects constantly. It's fascinating.
So, Russell, how are you with genes?
Well, I did that 10,000 liters of water thing, so I wear jeans.
See, now that and that prompted me to think about genes, and we'll come back to that later. But there's a new study that shows that denim microfibers are polluting our waters. So every time you wash your jeans, 56,000 microfibers, which, you know, they're tiny and almost invisible, but they wash out of your machine into sewage, into lakes and oceans. So,
Well, it's lucky I don't wash my jeans, really.
Well, hold that thought. We'll come back to that one. This week, we're talking about cars. Now, I know you've got a problem with your car at the moment, Russell, and that needs repairing. But when I need my car washing, I've got two small boys, and two small boys are very useful for doing car washes, and
especially the low bits.
They are, and they're very keen to do it, because typically it means they get to break out the pressure washer and pretend that they're in some sci-fi film with a high-powered weapon. And so they love getting that out and spraying everything except the car, pretty much. But that's typically how they wash it. But we won't be doing that anymore, because jet washing a car or using a car wash uses between 100 and 200 litres of water. Whereas if we use a sponge in a bucket, it uses 10 times less than that. And I just hadn't kind of given that any thought. I just kind of get on with washing the car, get the hose out, give it a spray, and we're done. But
we do kind of affect that. We can run water until it's cold coming out the tap and then drink that. And then there's somebody in another part of the world that hasn't got a drink of water for their children, they have to walk 5 miles to go get it. And I don't think we realize how lucky we are to have water on tap, like, and we pay a pittance for it. I mean, it's a good point. I save water even further by never washing my car.
So either follow Russell's advice and never wash your car, or if you do have to wash your car, then make sure you wash it with a bucket and sponge.
Yeah, okay.
The first International Day of Clean Air for Blue Skies is being commemorated around the world. And there was recognition by the United Nations General Assembly of the importance of clean air for the health and day-to-day lives of people. In a message, the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, highlighted the dangers posed by air pollution and urged greater efforts to address it. Air pollution contributes to heart disease, strokes, lung cancer, and other respiratory diseases. It also threatens the economy, food security, and the environment, he said. So there's talk of pollution around the world, and we see pictures of Indian cities or Chinese cities where the smog is really thick, and certainly think back to industrial times in Western countries, there was thick smog, and kind of don't really give it a second thought. But when you see a story like this, you think, actually, yeah, it is a massive problem.
It is.
And there was a statistic I read in the story. It says globally, 9 out of every 10 people breathe unclean air. 9 out of every 10.
Yeah.
We're fairly low on the earth. Breathe unclean air. That's yeah.
Yeah, it is. And during COVID, you know, I haven't got a great sense of smell. But generally, people, generally listeners, I am falling to pieces along with my tongue. but Sarah said that there was a notable change in smell, and as soon as the lockdown ended, that smell returned, and it is traffic fumes. And you don't, until it went away, you didn't realise how insidious it is, really.
Yeah.
You just put up with it.
Right. I mean, it says here that, you know, during lockdown, the emissions levels fell dramatically and gave the world a glimpse of cleaner air.
I would like to see cleaner air. I really would. And we live in a very nice area. We aren't highly built up. It's not a lot. Well, there is traffic when the holiday makers come down, but generally we live quite cleanly, and definitely different if you go up to London or to another city. You can definitely tell the difference.
Absolutely. Another story now, and you know, the aim of the Green Elephant Show is not just to talk about climate change and global warming. It is sustainability in its broadest sense, and so we will be talking about social people issues, and there was one here that I thought was worth touching on. Portland City Council has passed the toughest facial recognition ban in the US, blocking both public and private use of the technology. Other cities such as Boston, San Francisco, and Oakland have passed laws barring public institutions from using facial recognition. But Portland is the first to prohibit private use. And the ban was passed by that city council unanimously. And we've had similar discussions, debates in the UK about the use of facial recognition cameras.
And yeah.
I think it's a really interesting one, isn't it? How the use of cameras, CCTV, facial recognition has slowly but incessantly and almost ubiquitously intruded on our lives. And I think the worrying point about those is, and I think the story raised the point, is that it's not the camera themselves, but the use of the camera and the programming, the software program of the camera, because these cameras don't recognize faces on their own.
They have
programmed to recognize people.
Yes.
And the programming itself is biased. So, you know, they will be fed a certain number of white faces, a certain number of Asian faces, a certain number of African faces, and you know, how do you program it without being biased? Because the programmers are biased, and so you know the software's been shown to be biased, and you know, and there's no concept of consent unless you know you've been photographed by the camera. You've no idea.
No, and it's one of those things. GDPR kind of touches on it along with the CCTV commissioner that in the UK, and it's really become quite insidious. I think UK is now, I think there's 10 cameras for every person that lives in the UK. It's a horrendous level. It's absolutely massive, and in theory, if you have one personally, it covers a public area. You can have one looking on your garden for security purposes. But as soon as you start looking out the road, you start encroaching on the law. And, you know, there's been stories in the past where camera companies of these doorbells and CCTVs where you upload your images to the cloud openly give that information to the police. Well, that sounds really commendable, but at the other time it is essentially tracking, you know, using facial recognition. However, on the other side, sometimes they find lost children, sometimes they'll find criminals running away. What's the balance?
And that's exactly what I was going to say. What is the balance? And I can understand that a public authority might need to be using some of these technologies to keep society safe, but private organizations needing to use this facial recognition technology? You know, you need a security camera perhaps to see if somebody's on your premises, but do you need to know exactly who that person is and scan them through a database and recognize their face?
So how are they doing with the new Android and new Apple phones then? Because they use facial recognition to unlock their phone. That's private use of facial recognition.
It absolutely is. But I think, where is that getting transferred?
Don't go to Portland.
but is it in device only and therefore not transferred anywhere? I think we have to be really careful as a society about these kind of issues, and they need a lot of thinking about and a lot of debate. So I think it was encouraging.
Yeah.
It was interesting to see that not everybody was just going with the flow, because if everybody goes with the flow, it's too late to then do anything about it.
Yeah.
What's this kind of...
To a certain extent, CCTV is, you know, is presenting the content. You can do anything you like with that, really. You'll end up having an ID available from the way you walk soon. You know, gait analysis. I don't know where it stops. The CCTV is a serious problem.
I think.
But
moving on, Instagram now. Is building a product equity team and hiring a director of diversity and inclusion. And it seems that on the back of the George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, that Instagram is changing its team and starting to introduce some roles. So,
yeah,
I think, okay, that's good that you're getting these inclusion and equity people in, but one has to ask, why did it take Black Lives Matter and these things to happen before you started doing it? That's kind of one side of the thing. But, you know, having an inclusion and a diversity person, I think, brings its own biases and its own issues with, if you overtly include the wrong people, or overtly include, you know, those...
the right people.
you then build up a store of more issues. So, that's a really...
The one thing reading that article was that they created an equity team, and I've always had a big issue on the equality thing. There is no way that you and I can be equal, you know. We're definitely not equal in weight. We're definitely not equal in the amount of exercise we take. But we have equitable, you know, I do what I do, you do what you do. And for that purpose, we work well together. And I think that's the same thing with whatever elements of diversity there are, that is equity, more equality. So I do like that. And they're trying to create fair and equitable products. And I think that's good. You're right. They're publicizing what they should have been doing, but I think what they're trying to do and what everyone's trying to do is almost impossible.
Yeah, I think so.
Fact or fake?
Okay, so it's your favourite time of the week, Russell. It's fact or fake. Now, we mentioned genes a couple of times, and you mentioned not cleaning them. And so Let's start with, and this is a gene-based fact or fake this week. Because as we discussed last week, in order to make a pair of jeans, it's not that environmentally friendly. So you need to make sure you wear them for a long time. Was it 10,000 litres of water?
10,000 litres, yeah.
It's a lot of water to make a pair of jeans. So first up, jeans that have been unwashed for 12 months contain the same amount of bacteria as those washed regularly. Is that fact or is it fake?
Part of me wants to say I'd like to believe it fact.
So you're saying that jeans that have been unwashed for 12 months contain the same amount of bacteria as those washed regularly?
Yes.
That is a fact. Oh. There's been some studies to show that if you wash them every week, 2 weeks, that after 12 months, 15 months it was exactly, they have the same amount of bacteria in them. Really interesting. Okay, here's another one for you.
Yes.
The name denim originates from the French city of Nîmes or Denim.
The only problem is I worry about the fact that you might have come up with this and how devious you're becoming. I'm going to say that's fact.
It absolutely is. Denim originates from the French city of Nîmes. Denims. Okay, so that's two in a row. On a roll.
I'm doing better than the previous 2 weeks put together.
The original maker of jeans was one Mr. Levi Strauss, and his jeans are very famous, but...
Yes, and expensive.
Levi Strauss wore a pair of his own jeans every day. Is that fact or fake?
Well, every day from when he created them, presumably.
Yeah.
I would say... I would say that's a fake. They were workers, and he wouldn't have been... I don't know, fake. I'm going to say fake.
Okay, correct again. Oh. Levi Strauss actually never, ever wore a pair of his own jeans.
Okay.
Okay.
He was too high and mighty for it, was he?
Can we get a full house? So finally, fact or fake this week. The river in the Xintang province of China was blue because of all the jeans that are made there. Is that fact or fake?
Oh, that's really tough because I expect they do make a reasonable amount of jeans. Would it turn a river blue? I'm going to say fake.
Oh, you were so close to a full house. No. So the river in Xintang province, China, was blue because of all the jeans. They made a third of the world's jeans there in that province and turned the rivers blue until the Chinese central government decided that blue rivers wasn't such a great idea. We better clean those up. But yeah, turned all the rivers blue.
This is an element of blue river I'd like to see, but I don't suppose that the kind of blue it was wouldn't have been good.
Yeah. And blue fish. That concludes fact or fake for this week.
Oh.
Finally, before we go, imagine befriending an octopus, swimming alongside the much-feared great white shark, having your face stroked by a rarely seen clawless otter, and cradling a wild rockfish in your hands. This is the story about a man who made friends with an octopus. He said he had the privilege of visiting this incredible animal for almost a year. I think he said he went swimming every day for a year. It totally trusted me and lost all fear. It would take me on hunting expeditions and let me into its secret world. He said he developed an amazing relationship with an octopus, which he describes as he went to a golden underwater kelp forest outside Simonstown in South Africa, Cape Town. So, yeah, amazing story. Made friends with an octopus who let him go hunting.
Why we would assume that only cats and dogs can be our friends, I suppose.
So you'll be adopting an octopus next week.
Well, I haven't been in the sea for a while, probably probably for 2 years, living in the coast-bound region that we do, and I rarely get down to the beach.
There we go. So as usual, you can find links to all the stories we've discussed on our show page at greenelephant.show. If you've got any stories or comments you want to share, then find us across social at Green Elipod. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher and TuneIn. And it would be fantastic if you could subscribe and review our podcast. So until next time, thanks for listening and we hope you have a sustainable week.